Okay, you're very welcome to the last hour of the 9 till noon show. It's Wellness Wednesday now. Patrick Holford is author of Upgrade Your Brain. He joins us right now. Patrick, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Sounds fantastic. Is artificial intelligence involved in this, or do we have to rely on our own intelligence, I wonder?
Well, it may be that artificial intelligence will drive down our intelligence.
I think you're right, indeed. Now, the book is out on the 25th of April, published by HarperCollins. And you offer advice on how people can unlock your life's full potential. We can upgrade our brain, but our brain is incredibly underutilized. I mean, we really don't. I think we understand more about the cosmos than we do our brain sometimes.
I think you're right. It's definitely the last frontier, so to speak. Just to give you a little bit of context to this, I run a charity called foodforthebrain.org, and we've tested over 400,000 people now on their cognitive function performance, which actually starts to slip 30 years before a diagnosis of dementia, Alzheimer's. And the book is not all about Alzheimer's dementia, but I want to point out here, and this is just an undeniable fact, that less than 1% of Alzheimer's is caused by genes. So we literally, it is what you eat and how you live that determines your brain health. We are the architects of our own brain health. Alzheimer's is not a disease. I mean, it is a disease like diabetes. It's not a natural consequence of the aging process. We all know people who've lived, you know, well into ripe old age with no loss of mental function. So it's one of the subjects in the book, Upgrade Your Brain, because we are seeing an escalation not only in cognitive decline, but also ADHD, also autism, also depression, also anxiety. And I'm going to tell you one fact that is totally extraordinary that will get your attention. Chimps have a brain size of 385 grams. Homo sapiens peaked with a brain size of 1,700 grams. This is done on skull size, about 30,000 years ago. And today, we have an average brain size of 1,330 grams. In other words, Homo sapiens' brain has actually shrunk by up to 20% in the last 30,000 years. It's not to do with genetics. Everything is driven by what we put in our mouth and, as you quite rightly say, then how we use the neural network. That's the point.
And we'll fast forward back to the current times again, but just going back to the 80s, Patrick, you were the first person that was actually able to demonstrate that the right nutrition increased brain power by the IQ sort of metric.
Yeah, I mean, we did a study which was filmed by BBC Horizon and then published in the Lancet Medical Journal. We had this crazy idea in 85 about that let's take a group of 90 school kids and put a third onto high-strength vitamins and minerals. B vitamins are really important. We didn't know about omega-3 then. And a third onto placebo and a third onto nothing. And we hired a professor of psychology, Professor David Benton at Swansea University, who thought we were nuts. There's absolutely no way that giving kids a pill with vitamins is going to change their IQ. But actually, their IQ went up by 10 points on the vitamins, 3 points on the placebo. The study has never been criticized. It was absolutely perfect. And the first study in the world that woke people up to the idea that what you put in your mouth actually changes right now. I mean, not like in 10 years, how you think, how you feel, how you deal with stress, you know, things like sleep and so on. So what's happened for me is I've spent the last 10 years working with a group of 14 of the world's leading professors. One is on omega-3 fats, which are really, really important. I mean, literally studies of people, the more omega-3 fats, the bigger your brain is or the denser the gray matter. Another one, expert on B vitamins, B12 is really important. Another one on exercise, another one on sugar and so on. And because I've had this intense time with these geniuses, they don't see, they're one piece. They don't see all the pieces fit together. And that's what Upgrade Your Brain is about. So what I'm doing is I'm spending May in Ireland, starting in Belfast, then Sligo, then working down the coast, giving these two-hour seminars to really show people in very, very practical ways how they can upgrade their own brains.
Yeah, and we'll give people a sample of that as well so they can go and get more information from you. But it's generally accepted anxiety, depression, dementia, autism, ADHD, the rates are increasing. And mm-hmm. there's debates on in certain areas about diagnosis and what have you, but we'll leave that to one side to some extent. Is that, in your view, as a result of poor nutrition?
Well, it's two things. And actually, if you look at all the risks for everything, and there are 30 for dementia, for example, you can divide them down into things that affect the structure of the brain, like omega-3, the brain is literally 60% fat. The function of the brain, like sugar, is a fuel. So eating too much sugar definitely is a driver for ADHD, for example, even depression. Omega-3, lack of, is a driver for depression. And then utilization. And the utilization is the engagement. And when you're learning something, you know, the crazy thing is that the way we've set up society is you learn through your teens, possibly go to university. Then you get a job and your learning probably starts to slow down. You just do the same thing every day. And then you retire, which, by the way, increases your risk for dementia because you're not using your brain. So I'm 66. I've just graduated as a paraglider pilot. I've had to learn meteorology, air law, aerodynamics, and dancing, walking in the hills, anything that uses your body in a way that is not just a fixed routine is doing that utilization. So what I mean here is, for example, we know that kids who spend 4 hours on their iPads actually have lower mental health in many respects than those who have under an hour. So mindless, you know, watching of whatever it may be, TikTok, et cetera, is part of the downgrading of the brain. So you need the right nutrition, for sure. You need to not be eating loads of sugar, for sure. And also, you need to be engaging your mind and your body, which engages your mind because of balance and so on, in an active way. And often we're not looking at all those pieces. And when you put all those pieces together, you start... I mean, to tell you the terrible, sad truth, the youngest age of a non-genetic... Remember, I said only 1% of Alzheimer's is caused by genes. The youngest age of a non-genetic Alzheimer's diagnosis is age 19.
Mm. We see studies that pop up on a left-hand column of a tabloid newspaper that talks about, you know, doing Sudoku or regular crosswords. Mm-hmm. Small studies from somewhere or other shows mm-hmm. that people who are active in that regard are less likely to get dementia or Alzheimer's. I mean, I'm not rubbishing that, by the way, but there is a logic to that too, then, obviously, given what you said about, you know, it's not quite on this paragliding like you are, but to some extent it is challenging the brain on a daily basis. Probably not what we need to be doing, but it is in the same space.
It's a step in the right direction. And one of the best studies was in London. The taxi drivers have to learn whatever it is, 30,000 streets of London. And a study looked at those who passed the exam, called the knowledge, and those who failed. Very often they fail and have to redo it again. And they literally found more gray matter in the brain, you know, more density of brain from those who passed than those who failed. They'd learnt more. But you see, you have people like Jeremy Paxman, you know, super bright guys. We keep reading about all these super bright people who, you know, slip into dementia, which is unnecessary. And the reason can be something remarkably simple. And I'll give you, you know, I'm not saying it's all about this, but this is one thing, which is that as we get older, we malabsorb vitamin B12. And if you don't have B12, you know, you are absolutely heading for Alzheimer's. A study of one of our colleagues at Oxford, placebo-controlled, gave B vitamins high in B12 or placebo and got up to 73% less shrinkage in the brain in 1 year. I mean, the new drugs that have been out, actually the last one, donanemab, was 20% more brain shrinkage in 1 year. So the point is, you could have someone like Jeremy Paxman, super bright, using his mind, doing all the utilization. But if he unknowingly was a malabsorber of vitamin B12, which, by the way, is in meat, fish, eggs, and milk. But there is a simple blood test, which we've actually pioneered, and we do this. I mean, when someone engages with foodforthebrain.org, they get to do the free cognitive function test and the questionnaire and find out what's driving their risk and their weakest links. And we also send them a home test kit. They prick their finger and we measure things. And that's that and the book and the test sort of go hand in hand. So you can literally step by step get to the point where you're doing everything to upgrade your brain. I had
say,
a guy.
Yep, go yeah. ahead. No, go ahead, Patrick, if you want to give that
very
example.
Very quickly. I had a guy called Alan, and Alan was diagnosed with mixed dementia, Alzheimer's and vascular. What happened was his wife was finding him in different rooms at night. In other words, he could not find the toilet in his own house. And he went on our website, foodwithbrain.org. In effect, I would have given him the book if we had it then, Upgrade Your Brain. He did everything, not just B vitamins, not just omega-3, also exercise. He's now in a Morris dancing group. He went to bed earlier to get more sleep, which is important. He cut right back on his sugar. And now he has planted his entire spring garden. He's back on the computer. You know, we can have a very decent, intelligent conversation. Now, that was very, very late in the day and probably too late. So my real hope is that people engage in upgrading their brain, and some not people, when they're 70,
no,
but
I
younger.
Get you. But people will listen to this and go, well, that sounds good. It sounds fine, right? But then they thought, right, there's a website, so that means there might be, and I'm only saying, the cynical side of it. This is a business, isn't it, really? And if it was as simple as this, why do our countries not give us these prick tests? Yeah. And why do our countries not issue or incentivize vitamin B12 or fish oils? Or what have you. And I think that sort of cynicism breeds then. Do you say to that?
Well, I mean, first of all, we are a charity, so we're not for profit.
Well, yes, of course. Go ahead. Yep.
Right. So everything we're doing just goes straight back in, and we're relatively broke. We're actually supported by people who become friends of the charity and chip in €50 a year. So that's that. We have a ton of professors, all of whom are working for nothing. If you kind of dig deep, no one's making money.
No, I'm not questioning that, by the way, sorry.
No, that's fine. Please do. The next thing, might be controversial. I'm just telling you the truth. Someone from a big pharma company, I won't mention their name, came to Professor David Smith, who, by the way, was the second in charge of Oxford Medical School, who did the research on the B vitamins and the homocysteine blood test, and said, this is a multi-billion dollar drug. Mm-hmm. If we could patent it. You cannot patent something that exists in nature like a B vitamin. But because we cannot patent it, kill it.
Yeah.
So there is no commercial incentive. I would love to think that our governments weren't somehow influenced by pharma and all the rest of it, but they are. It seems to be that way. So the frustrating thing for us, and anyone who digs into the science or looks at our website or anything else, is the evidence is impeccable. We know right now how to prevent Alzheimer's for the vast majority of people. And you're asking exactly the right question. Why are we not being told this? So the purpose of the book, Upgrade Your Brain, and the tour in Ireland and everywhere else is to say to people, take charge of your own health. You are the architect of your brain's future.
Yeah, okay. It is fascinating stuff. Is there a one-stop shop that people can get more info on the book, and also if they're interested in going to any of the electorates in Dublin, Belfast, Sligo, Galway, Ennis, Tralee, Bantry or Cork through the month of May? Is there a one-stop shop that people can get all that info?
Yes, the charity is called foodforthebrain.org. So remember that, foodforthebrain.org/upgrade your brain, and then you'll see everything that you need to see.
Caller wants to know, is there an audio version of your book at this point?
Yes, I just recorded it.
Okay, right. It says Carmel. Do you know Carmel? No, I'm only joking. In terms of just, like, I'm not asking you to endorse a brand, Patrick, just finally, there's so much there. Like, you can go into your discount store, you could go into a top-end chemist, right? And there's these products everywhere. You know, you can pick them up for 50 cent in, as I say, one of your mid-aisle stores or whatever, or you could pay whatever. How do people know what's the right vitamin, the best vitamin, the most effective? Because if someone's going to buy into this, right? They don't want to feel that they might potentially waste their time.
Absolutely. Well, number one, if you read the book or you do the test or you go on our website, you can click on supplements and it will explain exactly what to look for. I'll give you an example. The what we call the RDA, or I call it the ridiculous dietary arbitrary, for vitamin B12 is 2 microgram. I supplement 10 microgram in a multi because my homocysteine, that's the B12 test, is perfect. But I need more than two. Two is too little. Now, if we have somebody with this raised blood homocysteine, in other words, a malabsorber of B12, the only supplements that work in all the studies are 500 micrograms, 250 times the basic RDA. So simple example is if you go into your health food store and you say, oh, I'm excited, I want to take B vitamins. If you're taking it in order to protect your brain and dementia-proof your diet, you want one that has 500 micrograms. There it goes. On omega-3, we'll learn about EPA and DHA. And, you know, it's really about the dose. It's not really about the price. So as long as you're getting the right amount. The point about omega-3, and I want to just, I'll tell you a real quick story, which is kind of fun. I live in Wales. They discovered 10 years ago the oldest Homo sapiens remains, right, 40,000 year old. And when it's covered in all this jewelry of shells, they thought it was a woman. It was called Paviland woman, but it turned out to be a man from the DNA. And when they analyzed the diet, a quarter of their diet was marine food, seafood, because that's the easiest food. Go back in those days, there's very little population. You're rolling around an island. Where do you get the easiest, simplest, most nutritious food? It's oysters, mussels, cockles, fish caught in rock pools, crabs. You know, it's so easy food. Point is, go back 40,000 years ago, one quarter of their diet was marine food. They're, of course, expending more than double the calories we are, walking, catching wood, and et cetera. So half of our entire diet would have to be seafood to have the same level of omega-3 that our ancestors have had for our entire evolution.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So just eating one serving of fish a week is not enough. So we've learned that you probably, to be optimal for omega-3, three servings of fish a week, and oily fish is better. So mackerel, salmon, sardines, pilchards, you know, anchovies, those sort of things. And I supplement omega-3 a day. And we can measure this in the blood. This is what we do. It's called the omega-3 index. So we can actually measure if you've got the optimal amount for your brain. And what happens with all of these things is that the side effects are amazing. It not only improves your mood and your concentration, but you get less heart disease, less diabetes, less cancer, less this and so on. So if you get nutrition right for your brain, if you do what's in the book, upgrade your brain, you will have done what's right for your body.
All right. Caller wants to know, do you have advice? I think you've kind of touched on this for anyone who has a attention deficit disorder. Did you say reduce sugars anyway in the first
instance? Absolutely. There are three sort of big drivers of attention deficit disorder. Number one is the sugar. Absolutely. So you've got to get the sugar down and eat a low, basically eat more whole foods with more fiber. So don't drink fruit juice, eat fruit. So number one, sugar. Number two, omega-3s. About 40 studies showing omega-3 supplements improve ADHD. By the way, the point is you can do a placebo-controlled trial on a supplement. You can't really do a placebo-controlled trial on a fish. You know, you just can't do it. And then the third thing is those B vitamins that I mentioned to do with the homocysteine. So let me give you an example of this. A pregnant woman who has a raised homocysteine level, which is very common, will have a child with all the symptoms of ADHD more prevalent at the age of 8. So some of this is set in pregnancy and some of it we can change. If you've got an ADHD child who's eating tons of sugar, has no fish, has no omega-3, and possibly is lacking B vitamins, it's not surprising.
A caller wants to know too, and I won't hold you very much longer. Should we be taking vitamin D during the winter months?
Definitely. And by the way, 10 years ago, I got busted by the UK government's advertising standards agency because I ran a campaign to say everyone has to supplement vitamin D in the winter, ideally 3,000 units. And they had a rule which said you cannot imply that you can't get all the nutrients you need from a well-balanced diet. Now, I don't know how it is in Ireland, but the UK government now tell everyone to supplement vitamin D in the winter. Only 5% of people do. And by the way, having a high vitamin D compared to a low vitamin D reduces risk of Alzheimer's by 19 times. So it's another important brain factor. We were basically all born to be naked, living outdoors, and a lot further south than Ireland.
Okay. Can dementia, last one I'll put to you, be a genetic condition?
There are two genes called AP and presenilin. And if you are unfortunate to have that gene, which is less than 1% of cases, it will run in your family and people will get dementia Alzheimer's in their 50s, usually, certainly by their 60s. So if you go, oh my God, my parents got dementia, I think I've got the gene. If they didn't get it until they were 70, 80, it's not genetic. Mm. So
it seems to be the consensus seems to be it's lifestyle, really. High blood pressure, too much sugar, drinking, smoking.
Yeah, but I think that there are some big things that are missed, like the B vitamins and the omega-3. Yeah. And partly because they were never measured in the big studies like the UK Biobank, so the data is not there. And partly, I think they're a bit of a challenge because everyone's waiting for a cure. And I tell you, because Alzheimer's, as an example, is a function of the structure of the brain and its supply of fuel, which includes antioxidants in fruit and veg, which disarm the exhaust fumes of the fuel supply and utilization. There is nowhere in the brain where one drug is going to stop it. So it's a myth, waiting for a cure. That's what people are doing. So it is about diet and lifestyle. And unfortunately, some of the quick wins, I mean, National Institute of Health in the US attributed 22% of the risk of Alzheimer's to that B vitamin factor and 22% to omega-3. So just having those two sorted, could easily cut your risk by a third. But unfortunately, it's a 10p a day or cent a pill. And it already has better science than all these drugs that have had $100 billion spent to get to this stage. And Big Pharma is not going to give up. I guarantee you within 5 years, there'll be a blood test, a bit like cholesterol for amyloid or whatever it is. And the doctor will turn around and say, oh, you've got a high level of this, therefore you need this drug. It's not about drugs. It's about your diet and lifestyle.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Foodforthebrain.org. You can get more information on the book and the tour. Patrick Holford, author of Upgrade Your Brain, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate you being so generous with your time. Take care.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. It's Wednesday, which means we have Chris Ashmore in studio because the Business Matters podcast goes live on our website, and he's live with us as well, I think. Are alive, yes.
I'm still here. Fine, okay. Still on the planet.
Listen, there's a very interesting, they all are, but a particularly interesting business matters coming up and an interesting guest as well in the work that they do. We'll get to that in a moment, but let's start with a little bit of news. And you've been looking at new car sales, Chris.
Yes, the annual figures, and we heard in a previous broadcast that you hadn't bought the only Porsche that had been sold in Donegal. Contrary to rumours, but anyway, that's for another day. New car sales for Donegal last month, 310 new sales, which was one up on this time last year. So that's not overly interesting. For the first 3 months, overall up 15% here in the county. For the people who like their stats, 1,438 compared with 1,252. But the interesting thing is new electric car sales down by 15% in March here in the county, dropping from 130 units to 110. And this is reflected across the whole country. There's been a dip in the new electric car sales. Concerns about range, lack of charging infrastructure, and also a reduction in the price of many of the new electric cars has had a knock-on effect, because then people are thinking, well, I'm not going to get as much when I trade in.
I think the early adapter market is being exhausted now at this point. And now you get into the people whereby they're on the fence.
Yes.
And I think a little bit more needs to be done outside of the industry to either answer questions or to address concerns. Because, you know, as I say, you're going to buy an electric car last year. You're probably going to hold on to it, aren't you, for a while? So those people are out of the game now at this point.
Yes.
And a lot of the conversation is about range anxiety. Where do you charge the car? That type of stuff, right? And we get, I don't know how many interviews I've done, and I really have to fight not to roll my eyes, about 15 million, 20 million, 25 million has been invested in upgrading the car charging network. Come on, people. Yeah. It's like these return recycle machines. People turn up to the few that are there and they don't work, or there's a non-electric car sitting there, or someone is charging the car and sod it off for the evening. That's the big problem. People need to know that they can very easily charge their car wherever they are, and until that's done, these figures are going to continue to stall, because why would you put yourself through that anxiety, some might say.
Yeah, indeed. I know somebody who bought an electric car and traded it in a month later They went up and down to Belfast a couple of times, and just too much hassle having to plan the journey in advance. What's interesting, though, is the Petrec electric sales, and these are hybrids. They are definitely on the way up, and people, because that's giving you, you know, a bit of both worlds, isn't it? 100%. And you don't have that uncertainty. Yeah. You can still go and top up in the garage.
Anyone who drives an electric vehicle, if you drive an all-electric vehicle, it's instant power, it's comfort, it's quietness. You've got all the tech. If you love the tech, it can do magic tricks that you never thought a car could ever do. But basically, if you feel that you are anxious about where you're going and the ability to access proper fast chargers that can get you up to 80% in 15 to 20 minutes, it's going to continue to put people off. And as you say, the hybrid gives that little bit of security. You can carry the petrol station with you.
Yeah. Eight of the top 10 selling models in Donegal for the first 3 months are non-European.
Okay.
Yeah. Skoda, the only brand in the top 10 that was European. The rest, Kia, Hyundai and Toyota's making up the rest of the top 10.
Doesn't surprise me. Good cars too, of course. This is interesting. Because I sometimes think some of these surveys don't talk to us here in Donegal, because I think the majority of us work in hospitality, we work in factories, we work in retail, and there's no such thing as hybrid working. But anyway, I suppose these are done on a national scale. What did the latest survey on hybrid working tell us?
Yes, now there's a survey was carried out, and it's been detailed released today. It shows that nearly 7 in 10 people stated that they avail of hybrid working. Now, there were about 700 people in this sample. And as you say, it's a national sample. And even if you broke it down, Donegal is, I think, 3.4% of the national population. So if they did sample a few people in Donegal, it's a handful of people.
I would say it's 2-3 out of 10. And so, I'd say they're actually working for companies outside Donegal.
You know, plus or minus 3 or 4% error margin. Yeah. Look, it's, as they say, it's a reflection of things, but how accurate it is, well, who knows?
A lot of people have actually lost faith in surveys after the last two referenda, but anyway, go ahead.
Now, this is the CPL salary guide, and it also shows that 4 in 10 people said that flexible and remote working would positively enhance their employment by providing a better work-life balance and increased job satisfaction. You know, well, kind of says what's on the tin there. But more interest, perhaps, more than 6 in 10 will consider asking for a salary increase in the next 12 months, and 7 in 10 are considering upskilling in the next 12 months. So people wanting to better themselves, and hey, well, there's no shortage of courses and things to do out there.
I just wonder if whoever was doing that survey stepped out onto the street from their office in Dublin. But anyway, career closer to home, the County Council has given the green light to quite a significant development at ATU Donegal.
Yeah, people may have heard about this in the past week or so. ATU in Donegal has been granted planning permission for a new sports campus, subject to a long list of some 30 conditions. Now, this has got the green light. By the time the funding is secured and everything, it'll take a little bit of time, but it's a very positive bit of news. A 42-acre site on the Carnamugga, Knocknamona area, just off the Business Park Road. They're talking about up to 9 pitches. There'll also be an indoor dome, so that'll be great for indoor activities, particularly in the winter months. An athletic track, a walking trail, all sorts of things. And as we know, the ATU in Letterkenny, you know, it's relatively cramped in where it is at the moment. There just isn't the space down there to develop outdoor sporting facilities. So 42-acre site, it's a sizable site. And there'll be, well, the direct spin-off when the construction of that comes in the years to come. And certainly that is good news. And also, we've just kept an eye, of course, Greg, on this programme about new housing developments, mm-hmm. and another one in with the council, planning permission being sought for 43 houses in the Tully Arvin area in Buncrana.
Right, okay. National Wellbeing Day. Did you mention this?
No, not yet. I just thought I'd throw it in. I know you love these days that are, there's a national day for something nearly every day now, isn't there? But We'll hear plenty of discussion about remote working because that ties in with well-being and workplace. How many people are accessible now around the clock? You know, do you switch off your phone, your emails, all that sort of thing?
Well, legally, you're supposed to be able to disengage,
exactly,
aren't you?
Exactly. And also our mental health and well-being. So you'll hear a lot more about that. It's Friday, April the 26th, and I suspect you may mention it again.
I think so, Chris. Right. Now, coming up on this week's Business Matters.
Yes, I've been speaking to Jerry Hawhey, who's the general manager of guestdiary.com. Now, this is an Irish hotel bookings company. It's based in Donegal Town. It's a great success story. They've developed a great business. In essence, they're providing the software for the hospitality industry, and in particular, small hotels and guest houses, and their booking system brings everything together to use in a, it's a guest diary, as the name suggests, so they can look at their internet bookings, the prices, the rooms booked, special instructions, all there, all brought it in together. And the company was founded back in 2008. It's been growing steadily over the last few years. Sales staff have doubled from 8 to 16 in the last couple of years, and they moved at the end of last year into a new office in the Donegal Town Enterprise Centre. So all going good. Obviously, the Irish market's important, so too is the UK market, and they've customers in a number of countries abroad, notably France and also Vietnam, where they're growing their business. They launched there 4 years ago, and companies, hotels in Vietnam using their system have logged almost 100,000 reservations. So in this clip, Jerry Hawhey tells us a little bit more about their business in Vietnam.
We built up a relationship with a gentleman over there that was working in a hotel doing sales and marketing, okay? And he was a very amicable chap, and we just got to know him an awful lot better. And over time, we got us thinking, what about Vietnam as a market, you know? And we had our concerns at the outset. But eventually what we did is we employed him as a full-time sales agent in the market in 2019. Now, that came with its own set of challenges, as you can imagine. Going out into the Far East markets is challenging at the best of times. But in terms of ourselves here in Donegal, I mean, firstly, we had to translate the whole system into the local language, which was a mammoth task in and of itself. The other thing, obviously, there's certain things within different markets. For example, Vietnam, there's legislative differences there in terms of how the Vietnamese government wants things to be done on hotel software, for example. So we had to adhere to all those different protocols and rules and regulations that were there. Rather than sit on our hands, we're not the type of people to sit on our hands here in Guest Diary, we decided, let's throw the kitchen sink at it and let's employ another individual in the Vietnamese market. So we duly done so. We went out and found another sales agent there. So basically, we have one sales agent there in Hanoi and another sales agent in Ho Chi Minh City. But overall, that's been going incredibly well for us. We have 60 big hotels there currently in Vietnam as we speak, and that's continuing to grow every week, Chris. So currently, that would, I mean, it's in around approximately 10% of our export growth at the minute. It's about 10% in the Vietnamese market. I mean, just in terms of booking numbers, when you talk about guests, Chris, I mean, I think we looked at it there earlier in the year. I mean, there's probably somewhere north of 100 million US dollars in terms of value of reservations that have gone through our system in the Vietnamese market since we went live there back in about 2019. So it's a bit of a success story, absolutely, no doubt about it.
Half percent of that would be nice. And presumably to, you know, providers, they have their own website, they're on Trivago, they're on hotels.com, they're on Airbnb, and all that type of stuff, and this brings together, you know,
And a lot of it, we mentioned during the interview, booking.com being one of the big ones. So this is, they've developed
but
the
this
business.
Is at the business end, this isn't the user end, we don't use
this is the hotels themselves. And how they make money, the company in Donegal Town, is they have a monthly charge, and it's based on the size of the hotel and the number of rooms. And
they're also looking to expand into other areas?
Yeah, developing a number of other products. Now, one of them is self-service check-ins for hotels. I've actually seen one of these abroad that... Now, they're particularly good in cities where you could walk in. Maybe you're just looking for a bed for the night. You don't need any leisure facilities and everything. A little bit like in an airport, you are going to go in with your phone, check in.
I just want to see that. The one thing I don't understand is why the check-in process is so convoluted. I would love to do some training in this regard, right? You go up to the counter and firstly, there seems to be some doubt that you have a booking at all. And that seems to be my universal experience. It's like, what's the name? Greg Hughes. Okay. And something goes on for about 40 or 50 seconds. You don't know, is this working? Is something happening? Am I booked in here? I've taken out my phone and looked down quietly to check the reservation. And then a load of stuff happens. Then you get the forms, which I don't mind. You have to fill that stuff out. And then you're standing around. You don't know what's going on. Then the keys are printed. It just seems to be so, in 2024, so convoluted. So many steps.
Yeah, and you've mentioned there about the keys and the little cards we put in. This is something else that guestdiary.com are looking at. There's going to be a change away from these door locks on the hotel rooms that we have now. And again, it's going to come to your phone. You'll come up to the door and you'll use your phone and there'll be a system there that your number and your phone will unlock that room. So lots happening there.
Okay, right. The podcast available for you right now to stream on our website or download at highlandradio.com. And it's also broadcast on Sunday for those who like to listen to it on the radio, Chris.
That's right. On Sunday after the 6 o'clock news. And you can also email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Brilliant stuff as always, Chris. And there's a superb back catalogue of podcasts there for those in business, thinking of getting into business. There's lots of tips and tricks and advice and pitfalls and advantages and all that type of stuff. I think it's an amazing resource in that regard, as well as just being generally a good listen. Now, you heard Chris reference there during the business news a potential significant development at ATU. Henry McGarvey is VP for Finance and Corporate Services and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Henry. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. So planning permission has been granted for a major sports complex in Letterkenny. That will, I read, include an indoor dome. So all that's true. Tell us what's planned.
Yeah, it's a fairly extensive set of plans, Greg. I think the news is positive. I heard yourself and Chris talking there. It's a permission to grant, and obviously we won't pop the champagne corks just yet because we have a 4 week statutory period to go through before we receive permission. But it's a large scale project, as you've said, that encompasses fields for Gaelic football, for soccer, for grass pitches, artificial pitches, the dome that you mentioned. And then the other piece of work that we've designed into this is really to make this hub a place for the community and a place for local people to visit. We've included walking, running trails, children's play park, a community garden. So it's as well as cricket creases and hurling walls, athletics track. So it's a fairly extensive piece of infrastructure which will serve both the needs of the university here in Letterkenny and also serve the local community.
It's proposed over a 42-acre site at Carnamugga. And as you say, it's not champagne cork popping time just yet. But presumably this will have to be done in phases, will it, Henry? And over what period of time and beginning with what?
Yeah, it will have to be done in phases, as you say. The first phase would be the infrastructure work, really, which would be getting the large machinery in there and clearing the site and dealing with slopes and dealing with drainage and dealing with all of that. So that would be the first phase, and then we would look to put in the really some of the smaller infrastructure, the AstroTurf. Football pitches, develop one Gaelic football pitch and just generally do it in probably over 4 to 5 phases, depending on funding, etc. This project has been the planning and the development, Greg, that we've received has been jointly funded through the Large Scale Sports Infrastructure Fund and the university. So it's been a joint effort. It's been a project that Donegal County Council led out on when we looked for funding 4 or 5 years ago, and we brought two national sports bodies came on board, the Ladies Gaelic Football Association and Cricket Ireland. So we had to get them people to come on board, and we also got support from local sports organisations, local schools and the industry up in that area in Carnamoga, Knocknamona. So it's been a joint effort. And again, as funding becomes available through both the infrastructure fund and through the university's own funding, we will develop probably in 3 to 4 phases.
Over what period of time do you think? 10 to 15 years, less?
Planning permission has been granted for 5 years. It will take a lot of things landing right for us to have this finished within 5 years.
Yeah.
It will be a 3 to 7 year project to get the entire project complete.
A lot of people will go, ooh, a dome. Talk to me about the dome and its scale and what it could be used for potentially.
Yeah, the dome is roughly the scale of it's not the scale of the dome that a lot of people talk about in Connacht, the Connacht GAA dome, which is a full size Gaelic football. So it's a smaller scale. It's more like the size of a soccer pitch, and it's that type of level. And again, the heights aren't as extensive as the dome in Connacht. So it's that type of level that will allow us to do some activity indoors when the weather doesn't permit us to go outdoor. But it's not a full size dome like the Centre of Excellence in Connacht.
I wonder, could it feasibly host a soccer match?
Yeah, it could. It absolutely could, yeah.
All right, interesting stuff. And at what stage might that, as you work through the development phases, you've talked about where you would start. What's the last sort of part of this project as you would see it?
Yeah, as you mentioned yourself and Chris mentioned there, we've conditions in there, around 30 conditions that we have to comply with planning. And that's a lot of that work reflects the work we've already done with Transport and Infrastructure Ireland around the roads and the work we do there, safety, before we can proceed. So a lot of that work on the roads will be the initial phases, firstly, and then, as I say, the work on the infrastructure in terms of just levelling out and drainage, etc. Then we would, the dome and the AstroTurf, the smaller AstroTurf cages as such for indoor football, or not indoor, it's outdoor football, but that type of, that would be the first phase. And as I say, that the planning conditions, we only sitting down with our design team this week to go through the planning conditions and see what they mean for us, because the planning asked us to develop some of the infrastructure up front in terms of maybe the walking trails and all of that. So we have to work through all of that detail, Greg, in terms of our compliance with planning.
But that can start now, really. The exciting thing is that can start with this next sort of step having been overcome and on it goes. Finally, Henry, will you be looking at, where do you see the funds for this coming from, drawing down national funds, peace funds, cross-border funds, EU funds? Do you see, is it that type of project where you can, because there's a community element to this as well, an education element to it, a physical and mental well-being element to it. So there probably is a lot of avenues that you can go down in terms of sourcing funding as this moves forward. Is that the plan?
That is the plan, and that's the plan we've adopted to date. It would be difficult to go back to university and say, we want to spend, and this project started off, Greg, probably in the region of 12, 14 million euro project, and with construction costs and all of that over the last few years, it's probably doubled in cost to deliver. So we certainly can't expect the university to fund 100% of this, but we will go back into the large scale sports infrastructure grant and into that fund, and the indications are there will be a call from that fund for further applications in the first half of 2024. So we'll go back in there, we'll make application. The university is always willing to match fund, where we're getting funding externally and funding from other sources. So there's some of the sources you mentioned there. There's North-South funding. The university is looking at how we commercialise naming rights and how we commercialise our real estate across the entire organisation. So we have an organisation visiting next week, which is going to look at that whole commercialisation aspect of the university, and we will be including this sports development in their itinerary next week as part of their visit to see, you know, are there opportunities in there to leverage funding. So we will look wherever we can to I suppose combine funding from different sources and just try and move the project on in a phased basis.
Brilliant. Okay. As I say, it's early doors, but every journey starts with, and continues. Sorry, it's not. We're well past the beginning. I know you have been working flat on this, but just when we start to talk about planning and overcoming a hurdle and moving on to the next one, it's all very positive. Henry, thank you so much for being available to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Henry McGarvey there, VP for Finance and Corporate Services, ATU Donegal. By the way, you just really have the rest of today and tomorrow to enter our €10,000 home makeover draw with an extra cash giveaway as well. So you can buy your tickets right now on our website, highlandradio.com. On Friday afternoon, someone's going to win a €10,000 home makeover in association with Foy and Company. And also a lucky ticket will be drawn for €5,000 in cash on top of the €10,000. So you can get your tickets in now. You don't have to answer your phone, by the way, or take a call. The tickets go into the drawn. We pull a ticket and you've won. And we'll make contact with you by hook or by crook. So if you want to win a €10,000 home makeover in association with our friends at Foy & Company, plus €5,000 in cash. The odds are pretty good on this, by the way. I'm not overselling it, but you enter a lot of competitions whereby you're talking tens of thousands of entrants. You have a good chance in this one, as good a chance as anyone. So you can buy your tickets right now on our website, highlandradio.com. Safe and secure to do that. If you want to give us a call or ask any questions, 07491 25000. But the lines will be closing on Friday, and someone is going to be €15,000 better off by way of €5,000 in cash and €10,000 for a home makeover. Tickets are a tenner. If you can afford it, it's completely up to you, of course. They get cheaper after that. 6 for 50, 10 for 80. Okay. Closing date for the draws around midday on Friday. So the window of opportunity is narrowing all the while. Okay. A caller says, I live on Leck Road. The traffic is horrific. Leck Graveyard is there for ages. I haven't heard this issue raised since the last election. Right, we have talked about that. I can't remember how far back it is, so you may well be right. What an excellent speaker you had on earlier. I'm going to take his advice. I'm off to get the fish vitamin B12 and omega-3. Hi, Greg. In relation to the tickets for the Donegal versus Derry game, they can be gotten on the website gaa.ie. I'm sure the next round of games, you would hope actually, will be better attended than the games last weekend. Some 1,000-odd watching inter-county games. It's crazy. But anyway, there you go. All right, that is where we have to leave it on the 9 till noon show today. Thanks to Donna Marie Doherty, who researched and produced the show. Thanks to Shannon Wilkins as well, working on the programme. We're back with you tomorrow at 9. Stay tuned. John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest after the news headlines.